You know that house on your block that always has that perfect green, lush lawn? It's been a tough summer even for them. Today, we'll take a look at lawns following a summer of drought. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Dave Minner will be here. He's a professor of horticulture at Iowa State University and a turf grass specialist. We'll talk about how lawns have coped with our very hot, dry summer, how to take stock of your lawn and find out what kind of grasses did better than others. Horticulturist Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension will also be here. He and Dave will answer your questions about your lawn and your garden. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. In a few minutes, Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension Horticulture will be here, and we'll take your questions about the plants in your life. But we're going to start today with your lawn. Dave Minner is a professor of horticulture at Iowa State University and a turf grass specialist. Hello, Dave.
How are you doing today?
Good. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here.
Well, I don't know exactly what things look like in central Iowa right now, but looking around in southeastern Iowa, we've had a little bit of rain. Things are greening up, but there are still big brown patches on a lot of lawns. Is that pretty much status quo across the state?
It is. I've been going through a lot of subdivisions, looking at old lawns and new lawns. And we know the corn and beans people. I live out in the country on acreage, but we know the corn and beans people have had a tough time this year. And it's starting to come home on the lawns now because we've had a little bit of rain. And some of those that have come back, they've probably come back as much as they're going to come back. And if it's still brown, you've probably got some death in there. And the nice thing is now is the time to do something about it if you've got some water. If you're able to water the lawn, then you can put a little bit of water on and see what comes back. That's one thing. And then if you determine that it's dead, you can go ahead and seed and then irrigate, and now's a great time to do that.
Now, I thought that lawns, for the most part, would go dormant with this kind of heat and this kind of dryness. Was this just too much?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, that the term dormancy is that the plant starts to wilt and then dries, and we go into the drought that we've had, let's say 60 days with not much water. And dormancy is really kind of a theory that the plant turns brown, the crown of the plant still lives, and then when it rehydrates with rain or irrigation, it comes back. But that's only kind of theoretical, and everything's not equal out there. So south-facing slopes, sandy areas, I got some sandy knobs on my acreage, and thatchy lawns, any lawns that were really thatchy and then allowed to go dormant, they just dry out too much. So, and this was an exceptional year.
So if you have some water available and you water right now and you start to see what greens up, what about those brown patches that don't green up? How do you decide what to do next?
Let's say you have determined that those areas are dead or not going to come back. It's a great time to seed. I put my first seed in the ground August 15th when I realized that my lawn's not coming back. And it was an old bluegrass lawn, this section of it. I have a pretty big area. And it's bluegrass that survived many, many years, but this year it did not survive. And so that one I'm renovating and putting back in a turf-type tall fescue. So and it was brown and dead enough that I kind of did a little test. I used Roundup on half the lawn, and on the other half of the lawn, I just went ahead and interseeded into what is dead. And that's what a lot of people can do. Whatever's dead, you can just seed into it. You can rent a slicer seeder and seed into it with more of the Kentucky bluegrass that you've already had. Or if you wanted to switch, you could switch to a different grass. But you should realize that if you're going to switch to turf-type tall fescue, it's a deeper-rooted, more drought-tolerant plant, then it's probably a good idea to kill everything and then come in with a turf-type tall fescue.
All right. Well, I was just going to ask you that. What kinds of grasses really suffered this year?
Most of our lawns are Kentucky bluegrass and perennial ryegrass. That's a standard mix for what we have. In the shade, we use a shade grass called fine fescue, which is different than the turf-type tall fescue. But those are the two grasses that we mainly have. And if you are seeing some death in your lawn, it's probably one of those two that's died. Kentucky bluegrass is our main grass for Iowa.
All right. And when you're reseeding, obviously you're thinking, okay, this kind of thing could happen again. Tell me about the tall fescue that you're using.
They've been around for quite a long time, almost 20 years now. And a lot of people in Iowa, when I start talking about fescue or tall fescue, they go, oh, I hate that grass. It's clumpy, it's broad, it's ugly. But I'm here to tell you, they've done a lot of breeding over the years, and I've got it my lawn, and a number of other people are using it also. And it makes a pleasant-looking lawn. It's certainly suitable for turf grass home lawn situations. It's got a deeper root to it. But I will tell you, you know, in the past I've said that this grass never dies from lack of water. But I put in a tall fescue area to my lawn about 4 years ago, and I lost about 10% of that even in this dry year on my sandy knobs. So again, it's not a silver bullet, but it's superior in this ability to deal with low water than the bluegrass.
Never say never when we have a summer this dry, right?
Yeah, it's Mother Nature, and it's a living thing, and living things unfortunately can die. We should say, though, that there are a number of lawns across Iowa that did go dormant and completely came out of it. So everybody's lawn's not the same. And what I've been saying is, when I go around to these newer neighborhoods or even some of the older neighborhoods, I'm looking at lawns that probably a good 25% of them have some death. At least 25% of the lawn has been killed. So you got to just determine whether you're one of those that have something that's lost, and then now's a great time, like I say, to go ahead and do that. It's better to start now than it is to wait until the end of September.
So you think that you're best off to kill what you have and then plant new seeds?
Only if you're going to come back in with more Kentucky bluegrass, because that's what most lawns are, then just come back in with it. You don't need to kill anything unless you've got a lot of weeds and a lot of other undesirable grasses, quack grass and other things. So you can determine whether you want to clean up what is existing there and then come in with bluegrass. But lawns that just have bluegrass and then have some dead spots of bluegrass, just come back in with more bluegrass. You don't need to kill anything. If you're going to convert to turf-type tall fescue, it's a good idea to go ahead and kill down what's existing and then come and seed into that.
And you mentioned that you put your first seed down August 15th. Is now the right time to do that?
Absolutely, yeah. I was early, and, you know, I knew what I was going to be doing, and I had water. I have a well system, so I had plenty of water. But now is perfect. This is absolutely the perfect time. This is our normal recommended first day of seeding here is the 1st of September. And the last day is the end of September. So now is the time to get going. It's plenty warm, and if you have water, your seed's going to probably be coming out of the ground in about 7 days.
And I have seen so many different methods for seeding lawns over the last few years, different ways of putting down the seed, trying to keep the seed there. What do you recommend?
Well, there's the garden centers have some really good equipment. The last time I used to go to garden centers, one called a Bluebird. It's a little bit of an older machine, but tried and true, works really good. Now I've been going to the garden center, and they've kind of upgraded. I see this one called Billy Goat. And it's a slicer seeder. It'll have a seeder box on it or a verticutter. But whatever machine, and they've got some other types of machines there, some that are like a miniature grain drill, like it's got a little disc behind it. But whatever you use, you want to make sure that you're cutting deep enough through the thatch and through the dead grass and into the soil, so you're planting the seed in the soil. Anything just put on top is not going to come up. So you want to try to get it into the soil, usually only about a quarter of an inch. But if you're running a piece of equipment, make sure that it's set low enough. And when you leave the rental place, make sure that it's set low enough that the tines are going to dig into the ground.
Digging into the ground sounds really hard right now because it is so incredibly dry. Do you recommend watering first so you have a little bit of give?
You could do that. You want to, if you water, then maybe give it a day or two to drain out a little bit. But it probably would make it a little bit softer. We're overdoing Ryman Gardens with a student project, and it is dusty, and it's and sometimes a machine bounces along the top of the ground. So a little water to soften it up, wait a day or two till it just dries out a little bit. Because any kind of seeding operation, when it's wet, everything sticks to the wheels and the machine gums up. So let at least the surface dry out a little bit.
How often do you need to water?
When you get your seed planted, then you can start to water and once a day, and everybody's system's a little different. But if I were to tell you, you know, just try to keep the top inch of soil moist. When you go out there, scratch down in the ground a little bit, take your rake and just look around. But sometimes that may mean two light waterings a day. For some areas, maybe you could get away with once every 2 days. But the idea is to water frequently, but not with a ton of water. You're going to water frequent and light just to keep the seed wet. And then it's going to start to come up, like I say, in 7 days, and still water fairly frequently for the next week. And then you can start to probably back it down a little bit after 2 weeks.
All right. So exactly the opposite of the advice that Richard gives us for the garden.
Exactly the opposite of the deep and infrequent.
Yeah, all right.
We like deep and infrequent on mature turf, but not for seedling turf.
I know that you have native grasses on your acreage as well. How has your prairie coped with the drought?
Is loving this. I mean, it's a lot of them are warm season grasses, so I've got a fair amount of bio. I've seen no decrease in biomass this year in my prairie, even though it's fairly sandy and we've had very little water. I'll have a big prairie fire this year.
So that may make some people think, well, if we're in for more summers like this, and of course we don't know that, but maybe we should think about planting native grasses. Is this the time of year to do that as well?
No, not for the warm season grasses. It's too late. It's towards the end of that. So these are warm season grasses, unlike a lot of our turf grasses are cool season. So your planting time for the prairie would be more of a May, June planting even.
All right. And as we look into the fall, hopefully we'll be seeing more rain. But is there anything we need to keep our eyes on as our grasses get ready to go dormant for winter?
Well, first off, we do. I mean, we could get an Indian summer and we could have 30 days here with no rain. So, and it would be good to go ahead and give your lawn at least a good drenching once or twice before, let's say, the 1st of November, just to get it regrowing. Fertilizer is what we do in the fall. Aerification is what we do. But, you know, if it's going to stay dry, nobody wants to run an aerifier. So really, we do need some rain or a couple waterings on the lawn to get us through the rest of the fall.
And do we need to be concerned if we don't get enough rain this month, will that compromise our grass for next spring?
It will even farther because this is our recovery time. This is a time when the lawn rejuvenates itself. You get some density, things fill in, all the recovery. If we go through a dry fall and you've been dormant all summer and you go through a dry fall here, it's going to be your lawn in the spring is going to be open. It may finally regreen, but you're going to get a lot of weeds coming in, crabgrass and other weeds. So right now our lawns are open.
All right. Dave Minner is a professor of horticulture at Iowa State University and a turf grass specialist. Richard Geron of Iowa State University Extension will join us in a moment, and you're welcome to join us with your questions. 866-780-9100. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we are here to answer your questions. Richard Geron is joining us now, Iowa State University Extension. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here today. And Dave Minner is with us. He's a professor of horticulture at Iowa State University and a turf grass specialist. And you can join the conversation by calling 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can leave a question on our Facebook page, or you can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Norm is on the line from Carroll. Hello, Norm.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Okay, I've got Heritage, Autumn Bliss, and Autumn Britain raspberries.
Mm-hmm.
And they got hurt really bad last April in that frost, and they never did recover very well, and I'm not going to get any berries this fall. And I can't irrigate them. Well, it's not that good, and my pond is dry.
Okay.
And I was wondering if I would be better off just mowing them off right now so they don't sap any more moisture out of the ground than what they already did.
I think I would wait and cut them back to the ground in March.
next March.
Right. And, okay. and then give them some fertilizer.
Sure.
Like a 10-10-10. And hope that we have a better season as far as moisture. And hopefully they'll produce. But okay. I would leave them at this point intact.
Okay. Well, they really look tough.
Yeah. It's not been a good year.
Okay. All right, then. I was just curious if I'd be better off. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Norm. And now we've got a lawn question. This is from Jay. I live in a new housing development where all the topsoil was scraped off and sold with sod laid over very dense clay soil. What do you recommend doing to help the sod develop into a healthy lawn? I've tried fertilizer, lots of watering and aeration this year. Would earthworms help?
Earthworms would help if you can get them. I mean, if they are naturally in there, they absolutely will. I mean, they'll start to work the soil up, and they'll ingest some of the thatch out of the sod in the lawn and carry it down. So over time, you're going to start to build kind of a horizon there, and it should get darker. But the things you mentioned already, the aerification to let the roots get down, and then the fertilizer. You could even use compost if you wanted to spread some compost as a fertilizer and then do that with your aerification. That may help build the system even faster.
All right. Josh has another lawn question here. He says, at the height of the drought, my yard looked completely dead thanks to a 4-inch rain and a 2-inch rain. It's almost all green now. Although walking through the yard, I can still see the dead grass laying down below the green grass. Would now be a good time to thatch the yard, and would now be a good time to fertilize?
Yes on the thatching, yes on the fertilizer, but with a little bit of a caveat. I mean, you've got to be able to put some water on. I wouldn't go out there in the heat we're having right now and dethatch these lawns unless you knew that you could put water on them. You're going to just add a lot of stress on top of them. But the dead leaves that are down below are probably not, in fact, the leaves generally, the blades don't add to the thatch too much. So the lawn should come right back through it. But as we start to get into some moisture, and just ahead of that, you could go ahead and dethatch it and then either get the rain, or if the rain doesn't come, you got to have a plan B of putting some water on it to let it recover from the dethatching.
All right, and back to the phones. Nona is on the line from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Nona.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Oh, I have just had a chance to spend some time in the yard since the rain and have discovered these lovely little 1-inch holes in my lawn, which I believe are voles. They've infested the entire back lawn and wondered what advice you would have for getting rid of those. I understand that that's fairly common after drought.
If in fact they are voles, let's just say they are, you don't need to do anything to that. There's not really vole traps. You could put mouse traps at the end of the runs if you wanted to do that and wanted to try to trap them.
Yeah, there's more than just vole tracks. It's really eaten about half of the turf in the back. There's tracks everywhere.
Yeah, I'm not positive that you have a vole problem there, and usually we see that in the spring after the snows come off.
Okay.
But it's a possibility that if you're living next to an area that's got real tall grass, that they're living in there and then coming into the yard a little bit.
Okay, so what should she do to try to figure out what is actually going on?
Send some pictures. If you can send some pictures in of the damage, we can look at it.
Okay.
I do know that in my yard, I just caught a mole, something different, the other day. But the moles sometimes exit their tunnels, and they do the heaping up of the ground, and the voles just kind of tunnel through the thatch near the surface. Uh-huh. So you can tell the difference between them. But where the moles have come out of the ground for some reason, I see these exit holes everywhere in my lawn now.
All right. I'm looking forward to sending you some pictures and see what you can say.
Please do.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Nona. And next up, let's go to Marsha on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Marsha.
Hello. I've got a question on grass. Again, I've been trying to grow some grass and have put plastic over it to kind of eliminate some of the evaporation. And now I'm seeing what I think is, a mold or some kind of a growth or something that's on the ground, and the grass isn't doing very well either. So what's the next option?
Well, what you're doing logically, it sounds logical that you don't want to lose the water, and I'm sure it's keeping some water under it, but the plastic at this time of year can be really hot. It can be miniature cooker greenhouse under there. So I'd get the plastic off and at least get it ventilated, but I would probably pull it completely off. It's perfect. It's ideal conditions right now to put seed in the ground and water it. It'll come up just fine.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call, Marcia. Let's next up go to Calvin on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Calvin.
Yeah, hi there. I'm just kind of curious about this fall, if the dry weather continues, what kind of NPK on a fertilizer, and then if we get into a wet fall and a more normal fall, you know, should we change our nitrogen, phosphate, potash fertilizer?
Really, I wouldn't. I wouldn't change a single thing. We've gone through a drought period, and did you fertilize last fall or this summer? Last spring?
I kind of fertilize at least 2-3 times a year, and I haven't put on my fall fertilizer. That's why I'm asking the question. So I kind of laid off on the nitrogen fertilizer through the drought here.
Yep.
And I did cut it longer. So my lawn come through pretty well. I watered, you know, like I needed to. So yep. I do have a few spots that are kind of browned up, and I'm going to have to reseed those here. But I was just curious, if the drought continues, if I should, you know, hold back on the fertilizer or increase phosphate, potash, or what should I do?
Sounds like you did a lot of right things, mowing the lawn tall and backing off on your fertilizer in the summer, so that's good. And it sounds like it came through it pretty good with just a few spots. But I wouldn't change a whole lot, except for you can hold off on your fertilizer. I'd use the same type of fertilizer you've been using. We don't need a lot of phosphorus unless you have a phosphorus requirement based on a soil test. A lot of our soils are pretty high in phosphorus. So we're mainly talking about the nitrogen and potassium. But what you can do is wait until it's going to rain a little bit, and then actually let it rain so you don't wash the fertilizer off, and then put some fertilizer on behind it. But you've still got time to fertilize from now all the way up through the middle of October. So you got a lot of time. It'd be nice if the lawns recover, and then go ahead and put a little fertilizer on them.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Calvin.
Yep.
And we certainly have generated a lot of lawn questions. If you have a question about your lawn or your garden or anything else going on with the plants in your life, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Dave Minner is here today. He's a professor of horticulture at Iowa State University and a turf grass specialist. And Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension is also here. And let's get to some email questions. Maury says, can I aerate my lawn and then seed over the top of that as opposed to using a seed drill?
Great question. And yes, in fact, you can use both of them. That's what I'm a little bit neurotic about this. I love to get as much seed in the ground as I can. So sometimes I do both methods. But aerifying and seeding is good. And what I'd suggest is that if you've got a lot of brown grass, just mow it down as short as you can. And then you can spread seed right on top of the ground. Now, normally I never say that because you walk away from it and it doesn't come up. But spread some half of your seed first, then run your aerifier over top of that, then spread more seed over top of it and rake the whole thing together, and it'll rake it into the holes. So that's a real good way of kind of getting it mixed in. And you can run your aerifier just as much as you can until the ground looks like it's riddled with holes.
All right. And Richard, a question for you, believe it or not. Ellen from West Branch wrote us. She says, I'm quite sure that more than one of my rose bushes in my large bed have rose rosette disease. They are on their own rootstock. I know that there is no cure, and the recommended procedure is to completely dig them out, making sure that no roots remain, and then burn them. I have two questions. One, since the roots will be extensive, after I cut the canes down, should I just paint the cut surface with full-strength Roundup? And two, what can I do to protect my rose bushes from this disease in the future?
Well, as far as prevention, there's really not much you can do besides removing those affected plants and destroying them. You can look for maybe some multiflora rose if you have any in the neighborhood, and destroy those if they have the disease. As far as the roots, I think if you do a good job of digging them up, that should take care of it. If you want to make sure, if you do notice some very large deep roots that you can't remove, just apply Roundup to them.
Okay. And let's go back to the phones. You can join us at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Next up is Paul on the line in Bettendorf. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
What's your question?
Thanks for having me on the line. Mm-hmm. So I have a fescue that's been sawed, installed in 2009 with a watering system, and so it's in pretty good shape. But I'm starting to see a few clumps of grass that have this powdery substance on it. It looks blue or white, but when I brush it off with my fingers, it turns black in my fingers. I'm wondering what that is and if there's something I can do about it.
Well, I'm kind of curious where you got your bluegrass sod or your tall fescue sod, because that is relatively new in this state. We've just got one sod producer that's producing a tall fescue sod. So it's available for people who want to sod their lawn. But to answer your question directly, I'm guessing that's slime mold. And if we've had some, it's been real dry, but if you've had water come back on or if you've been able to water, you'll get this stuff all over the leaves, and it looks like ashes. Sometimes it's white, sometimes it's gray. You described it a little blue, but you can wipe it off with your fingers. You can brush it off with a broom. You can probably hit it pretty hard with a hose. And it's probably slime mold, and it looks like it's going to take the lawn over, but you should do absolutely nothing to it except for sweep it off if you want to. It really won't kill the grass.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And here's a question that we got on Facebook from Jess, and she says, my crabapple tree had a bunch of suckers growing out of the ground all around it. I didn't have time to cut them when they were short, and now I have big stumps left over from them in my lawn. How do I get rid of these?
You basically go out with the pruning shears, and you prune them off as low as you possibly can. That's all you can do. You cannot apply a herbicide to those because they are coming up from the roots of the parent plant, and if you apply a herbicide to those, that would damage or destroy the parent plant. So the only thing you can do is periodically go out there and cut them off at ground level.
All right. Back to the phones at 866-780-9100. Elsa's on the line from Des Moines. Hello, Elsa. Oh. Hello? There we go. Okay, start over. I had a little technical glitch there.
Okay. This is Elsie, and I just want to thank you for letting me ask the question. I have a walnut tree in my backyard that's kind of a predator to lawns. I have had a little bit of success of planting my lawn in the spring and just keeping it wet. And I use bluegrass, but I have a few little bluegrass clumps coming up in this kind of bare area. Can I take a hand hoe and just kind of scruff up the grass, the dirt around this, and then go ahead and plant more grass seed and add some compost to that, like peat moss or something, and keep it wet at this time?
Elsa, you're reading my mind, because I was going to try to fit that in here somehow, but that's a great way to do it. Any bare ground, or even if it's not under the tree out in the lawn, if you've just got small patches and don't want to get a piece of equipment, you can take compost and potting soil and seed and mix it all together in a 5-gallon bucket or your barrel or whatever you want, and just look at it. Make a little patty cake and look at it and try to get about 20 seeds in a square inch when you're looking at this hamburger thing. And go ahead and spread it in there and then work it in with a stiff rake. A hoe probably wouldn't work, but any kind of stiff rake can scratch it in. That's quite a bit of work to work that rake into the ground, but that's a great way to plant
seed.
So
I should use a rake first to do the soil and then... okay. I do a lot on my hands and knees, I'll tell you.
Yeah, if you can just scratch it up, all you need to do is get about the top half inch to a quarter inch scratched up, spread the seed on it, and then scratch it in again, and then just step on it with your feet or pack it down with your hands. And
okay, what do I do about the walnut tree?
Well, keep the walnut tree, but I'd have to say that I don't think you might be referring to juglone, which can hurt other plants, but that does not hurt the grass at all. And generally we can grow
in the walnuts.
Yeah, we can really grow pretty good grass underneath walnut trees because a lot of times the shade is not too bad and they drop their leaves in the summer sometimes and they let a lot of light in. So generally we have pretty good ability to grow grass right up to the trunk of the tree with walnut trees.
So should I trim the walnuts to make more light get to the sun then or to the lawn?
I would have to say that I think that tree, sounds like you're not having success underneath that tree. You could do some pruning if you want, but I would just try to get the grass back in there. And another grass you might want to try instead of the bluegrass is fine fescue. We've been talking about turf-type tall fescue, but there's another one, creeping red fescue or fine fescue, and that's our most shade-tolerant grass. I'm pretty confident you can grow that underneath your walnut trees. I have huge walnut trees in my yard, and I've got great grass under them.
All right, Elsie, good luck with that. And we need to go to a break here. When we get back, Dave wants to talk about David, who sent us an email, not you, Dave. He wants to talk about lawnmowers, so we'll do that in just a moment as well. And you can, of course, join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or you can leave a message, a question on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio, as well. With me, Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension and Dave Minner, a professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. They're here today to answer your questions. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension and Dave Minner from the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. We're taking your questions about your lawn, your garden, and the other plants and trees in your life. The number to call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Dave is a turf grass specialist, so if you're having trouble with your lawn, today is the day to get your questions answered. And one of our listeners wants your thoughts about lawn mowers. Which kind do you prefer? And also, what about bagging the clippings?
Well, let's take the easier question. The bagging of the clippings, you probably don't need to do unless you need some green material for your compost pile and. You haven't been using a lot of broadleaf herbicides. They work well on your for compost material. So I bag every now and then when I need some material. But generally, just let them fly. You want to mow so you're not removing more than one-third of the leaf blade, and the clippings should easily go out of sight. And they add nutrients back to the lawn, so that's a good thing. So if you can set your program up primarily not to bag in the fall, which is coming up, though, even though I say that, as soon as the leaves start to fall, you can start bagging some of that and get them off because you don't want them to get wet and stuck to the ground if it ever rains again here. But wet leaves stuck to the ground going through the late fall and winter kills a lot of grass in the shady areas.
All right. And do you have a preference when it comes to lawnmowers?
There's a lot of good ones out there, and if I were to even start to, there's red ones and there's green ones, and they're good. I did just get a new rider myself, so I'm from an old one I had, and it's a real joy for me to go out and mow my lawn now.
All right, here's a question from Jenna in Oxford. This question is for today's horticulture experts. My husband and I are starting a U-pick blueberry farm, and we planted 200 bushes in May. We added lots of peat moss, mulched them heavily with wood chips, and installed drip irrigation, but we ended up watering them too much during the drought, and they started to die. We recently scraped back some of the mulch to give the bushes some air, and it seems to be helping. What else might we do to give the stressed plants a better shot at recovering?
That's all you can do is just solid good care. I would say you probably have to water those plants on average about every week or so when it's dry. They do have a very shallow fibrous root system, but they hate standing in water. And so if you have a system and you water the plants really well, come back in 6 or 7 days and actually kind of brush away the mulch and check on the soil. If the soil actually is still moist, don't water. Come back in a day or two, check again, and then kind of fine-tune that. and basically water when the soil surface becomes dry.
All right, and Jenna has a question. She says, I have a terrible time with Canadian thistle on my rural property. I've heard that grass can crowd it out. Is that true?
No.
Richard took that grass question right there.
Wishful thinking.
And that's
right?
The answer. Yeah, you're not gonna get grass to outcompete that. But well, once you get them popped out or killed, then the grass can come in and recover. But they can take up the space of even a square foot. And when you pop it out with a knife and look at all the competition it's doing to the lawn.
All right, Philip's on the line next from Bettendorf. Hi, Philip.
Hi, Charity.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is about urine burn in the yard. I have a female dog, and when she goes out, I end up having multiple round yellow spots of dead grass. Does David or Richard, do they have any solution to this problem?
No, and someone actually studied some of this with urine and with feces on lawns, but no, the females, they do it in a concentrated area, and that's what the problem is. So literally, you'd have to be out there flushing it, and if you can, I mean, if you can see where they're doing it, and you can flush it, but normally you just see the damage, and it'll be a darker green area with a dead brown spot in the middle, is a classic for a dog spot. Richard, you probably get this question a lot, but I haven't found anything perfect to resolve.
No, just resign yourself to that fact and maybe try to train it to go in a certain area and leave it at that.
All right, Philip. Sorry, we didn't have an easier answer. Just love her anyway.
Right.
All right. Next up, Nancy's on the line from Adel. Hi, Nancy.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I'm very saddened over the state of my clematis bush. It's about 10 years old, and at the beginning of the season, it did have a small brown area, so I cut that out. And it did have a few flowers this spring, but it just didn't look nearly as happy as normally. And now I think it's dead. I did try to water it during the year. It has thick roots going down to the ground. And I'm just wondering what the situation is here. Is it really gone forever?
I wouldn't give up yet. And so I would maybe water it once or twice this fall and then cut it back next spring, maybe fertilize lightly next spring, and then see what happens. Sometimes they may mislead you, and you may think, well, it's dead, but maybe it's not. So obviously if it doesn't come back next May, it's gone. But I still think there's reasonable hope.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call, Nancy. Next up, let's go to Sally in West Des Moines. Hi, Sally.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about my hybrid tea roses. They're on the east side of my building, and this year they've gotten very, very leggy. The canes are thin. I've clipped them back and tried to keep them watered and given a little fertilizer, but they're not producing buds, and they just keep getting taller and taller and taller. Do you have any ideas for me?
I would water them periodically if it stays dry, maybe once a week or so.
Okay.
I would not prune them back at this point. Just leave them go.
Okay.
If they're hybrid teas, I would place some soil around the base, cover the bottom 8, 10, 12 inches with soil in November, and then prune them back in the spring, fertilize them lightly in the spring, not overdo it, and hopefully they'll be much better. But if they're really, really tall, that would suggest maybe too much fertilizer, maybe not enough sunlight. They do best where they get at least 6 hours of direct sun. If they're
getting that.
Okay. So if that's not an issue, then make sure that you don't over-fertilize. You can fertilize lightly in the spring, maybe lightly around late May, early June, during that first flush of bloom, and possibly once in July. But after July, don't fertilize.
Okay. I'll take your advice. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Sally. Next up is Sam on the line in Carroll. Hi, Sam.
Hi. Hey, I have one question each for Richard and Dave.
Okay.
My question for Richard is, we have a mulberry tree that we bought this house in 1997, and it was quite small when we bought the house.
Mm-hmm.
Now it is towering.
Mm-hmm.
It's right next to our deck,
mm-hmm.
actually about, looks like about 5 inches going from the deck straight up. We do have a lot of, obviously we have a lot of branches and leaves. Some of the branches are slightly over the roof of our house, and some of the branches are about halfway over our deck. Now, we love it, actually. We don't have any other trees. We also know that we have to deal with bird droppings because
mm-hmm.
the birds come and they eat the berries and all that kind of stuff. Do we need to do anything about the tree other than enjoy it?
I think what I'd probably plan is for its eventual removal.
Okay.
And so I would probably plant other trees, better trees, in the area.
Okay.
Maybe a oak or a linden or a maple.
Okay.
And get those started. And then maybe, let's say, maybe 4 or 5 years down the road, maybe remove the mulberry. Because I think at some point it's going to probably have to come out. And so I'd kind of plan for that eventual.
Because it's too close to the structure? Is that
right?
The...
Right. The mulberry can get to be a fairly big tree. And I'm concerned that maybe actually too close. When it does fruit, it is quite messy. I think that's going to get worse over time. And so I'd probably, at some point, remove it.
Okay. And would you cut it down? Would you trim it in the meantime, at least some of the branches that are overhanging
right.
the structure?
Right. So they're off the roof. You don't want that where they might actually damage the shingles.
Okay. So definitely we'll have to remove it at some point.
I think so in the future.
Okay, great.
But I would plan for that by planting some other trees that are really good shade trees that can be there for many, many, many years.
And not quite so close, obviously.
Right. I would say a shade tree typically should be at least 25 feet from the house.
25
usually.
Feet, okay.
Yeah.
And then on the lawn issue, I know you've covered this already, but my four-step person that works on our lawn came and looked at all of our patches, large patches, this whole issue of dormant versus dead. He showed me that there were roots of the grass blades that were alive, even in the brown patches. But I'm a little skeptical, and I some of what you said in the beginning sort of confirmed my skepticism that we still need to seed, because as you said, if we have large open patches, that's not a good thing, right?
It is a time, but, you know, I won't second guess some of our lawn care experts that are out there, and they have the advantage of being on site, and they are pretty knowledgeable. In that area that's brown, you can simply run your hose. Just put your hose, you don't even have to put a sprinkler on it, just run a puddle of water there, and you'll see everything that should start to come back in there within a week. It'll respond very quickly. And if absolutely nothing comes, then you still have time to seed. So you can do a little test for yourself. But it is kind of an art to determine what's alive and what's dead down there.
All right. So he can give it a test, though, and get a good idea. All right, Sam, thanks so much for your call. And back to the email. This is from Eric. He says, we built a new house on ground that was a cornfield, and now we're getting ready to have the yard prepared to seed after I killed off all the velvet button weeds with Roundup and mowed them down. We do not have capacity to water the entire yard. So other than watch the forecast and try to seed before it rains, are there any other steps I can and should take to ensure that the grass comes up in the spring?
Just a good soil prep on the lawn. If you do have compost, it can help hold some moisture also. You know, addressing a compost on top and raked in with the seeding is sometimes beneficial. If it was a cornfield, though, and productive, it's probably a fairly productive piece of ground already. If you do have, I don't know if you're on an acreage, but some area right around the home, if you can at least move a sprinkler and get the lawn addressing the home, say 20, 30 feet or so. I'm putting in, almost 15,000 square feet of lawn, and I'm moving hoses around every day just to get some water on them. So I would try to put some water around the home to get at least that lawn up, and then see what Mother Nature does on the rest of it.
All right. Bruce is on the line next from Des Moines. Hi, Bruce.
Hi. I have a question on some piece of property near the curb on my lawn that was torn up, and then fill dirt was poured in with a bit of rock. They didn't tamp it down, and it's kind of sinking. There's some grass there, but the bare area has been taken over by weeds. There's some crabgrass, but there's one that's, I'm really not sure what it is. It's like, it look, kind of looks like lace, and it just spreads out flat. And I dug it up, and like a week or two later, it's back. So how can I get rid of that? What can I use prior to reseed again? Can I reseed after if I use a chemical on it?
Well, I guess the question is you have to decide whether you're going to use something like Roundup, which is going to kill all of what's existing there, or is some of what you have there, do you want to keep that? That's the first question.
Yeah, there's really nothing worth keeping. There's a few clumps of grass there, but not a whole lot.
Then go ahead and take it all out. And you've probably got some kind of annual grassy weed, crabgrass, barnyard grass, foxtail, something like that that's in there. And it's going to die when we get to our first frost, but you really need to finish that off now so you can have a good prepped bed with no competition. So I'd go ahead and do that. And if it's kind of crummy soil, again, a spreading of compost in your seed, work the area in with a rake, put the water on it, and it should do fine for you. You could even get a little bit of crabgrass starting to germinate, but I wouldn't worry about it because the frost is going to get that nipped out before it gets substantial.
Okay, is there something other than Roundup I could use?
There's some burnouts. There's some clove oil products if you're not looking for a herbicide, but they have some natural products that burn down the surface, and you could use that, and it'll burn it down. It's not as effective as Roundup, but it will knock that down. You can just, I don't know how big the area is, but you can mow it as close as you can and just hard rake and get all that stuff off, and then go ahead and seed into that if you've got enough bare soil showing. And it'll probably, the lawn will still catch, and the annual weeds are going to start to die anyway soon.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Bruce. And last call of the day, John on the line in Waterloo. Hi, John.
Hi. You mentioned, fine fescue for shade and other fescue turf grass type and bluegrass. And so I've got shade and sun and that kind of thing. So I was wondering how you do you kind of mix, have some mixed thing, or do you just to blend them in to where your shade and sun areas are, how do you transition?
If you've got shade and dense shade, shade's kind of a general term, but if you've got shade, try the fine fescue in there. Just put 100% fine fescue in there and go with that. The unfortunate thing is if you're going to use tall fescue, it's kind of a different looking, much wider bladed grass than the fine fescue. So in the full sun area, you'll probably get kind of a demarcation line of where things don't grow in the shade very well. And where that is, put the creeping red fescue. And then where you're into the full sun, then you can use the turf type tall fescue or bluegrass out there.
All right, John, thanks a lot for your call. And Dave Minner, thank you so much.
It's great to be here.
Come back again. Dave Minner is a professor of horticulture at Iowa State University and a turf grass specialist. Richard Giron, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. And, of course, we'll be back with Horticulture Day next Friday. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan. Technical support from Jason Burns in Ames. And today we say goodbye to IPR talk show producer Alex Hoyer. He has been a very important part of our talk show team for more than 2 years now, always striving to make the shows here better. We will all miss him both professionally and personally. And we will also miss the days when he indulged in one of his favorite hobbies, which was picking the perfect music to complement the show. So, Alex, this one is for you.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you.
I'm Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of IPR News.
Silent until then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together? Happy trails to you till we meet again.